Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, all of you solar eclipse survivors, everybody who got a chance to see it last night, everybody who was, you know, pumped up about it. And since we all made it through, this is going to be my post solar eclipse podcast, my first one. And I'm very, very happy to have a wonderful guest join me today that we first spoke, I believe it was last week or a week before, and talked about what we might do. And we're here basically sort of to try to do a little bit of a introduction podcast to Jordan and of course what he does. So I guess I'll pass it over to you, Jordan, and let you sort of welcome yourself to the crowd.
Oh, thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. It's
my pleasure.
It's fantastic to be here. A little bit about me, so people, you know, they have an idea of, you know, who they're listening to or viewing or watching, whatever it may be. My name is Jordan McGregor. I've been a realtor for about 14 years now. A lot of experience in real estate. I've been involved in some form of real estate investment or acquisitions, dispositions, what have you, for the last 25 years. I wasn't always a realtor, obviously. My first career was in law enforcement. I worked in Toronto and quickly realized, you know, while I love the job and love the people, that wasn't for me. I was meant for different things. And that's, I eventually moved into professional real estate. I've been doing that for a number of years. My focus in real estate has always been investment oriented. I love the idea of creating things, making things, building wealth through real estate. And, you know, for the last, you know, probably 10 of the 13, 14 years, I've almost been specifically focused on real estate investment. And I've had the really fantastic opportunities in my career. I've worked with a lot of funds, syndications, REITs, a lot of institutional clients, a lot of retail clients as well. So like, they retail clients would be like you and me, people who are trying to build up their portfolios and just create a better quality of life. And it's kind of led me to what I'm doing now, which is really a lot of what I do now is education. Is teaching people how to look at properties, how to analyze them, how to forecast value, how to build out their plans. And, you know, I find that's one of the biggest mistakes people make is they kind of have an idea of, you know, what they want to do, but they just really don't know how to do it. And so that's what's led me to doing what I do now, which is I'm now in software development, still a realtor, obviously. Mm-hmm. I still have a key a group of clients I work with for acquisitions and dispositions across all various types of real estate. But now what we're doing is we're building out education platforms and evaluation tools and systems to help people properly analyze properties. And if it's a good buy, if it's not a good buy, or, you know, what have you. That's what we're doing now. It's really
great.
Exciting.
Great. Well, I guess the first thing I should say is, are you even in real estate unless you've got a side gig in terms of either whether it's a software developer in your case, podcast guy in my case? You kind of have to be in a few different places, whatever those might be. Obviously, I think, you know, of course, with real estate, for a lot of us, it's a passion, something that we got into. And for me, it was literally, I was joking with my guest yesterday. We were trying to figure out where both of us connected in terms of when do we both start our interest in real estate. And we figured out it was Monopoly. And I don't know if that at all applies to you, but it strangely applies to so many people in real estate that Monopoly is where the bulb first went off and said, wait a minute, this seems like fun. How do I do this for a living? But going back to what you're saying, yeah, so you're obviously, you know, doing that. For me, it's all, you know, again, it's always interesting to sort of go behind the scenes, sort of peel back the layers when I talk to people. Yesterday's client, she was actually born in the same hospital as me, which was just so odd that would even come up, but it did. So you are, again, before this life, and let's just start maybe from the beginning, where were you born and raised?
Yeah, I was born in Newmarket.
So okay.
Good old Newmarket.
So you're an Ontario guy from the beginning? Yeah.
I'm Ontario through and through. My parents, my dad was a big executive for Sony, and that's what brought us to Toronto. And nice. We moved out around 88, moved towards Kingston, a little town called Sealy's Bay, and then shortly thereafter moved into Kingston, which is gorgeous. If you've never been to Kingston, Kingston's really, it's a wonderful city. It's a hidden gem. It's, you know, one of the oldest cities in Canada. It was the first capital of Canada, actually, and then they moved it to Ottawa. And it's absolutely stunning here. We're very institutional market in Kingston. So I think a lot like Kitchener-Waterloo. So a lot of schools, hospitals, corrections, a lot of government offices in Kingston, which is, you know, another, it, that also got me into real estate, you know, the institutional type markets and what markets are great markets to invest in as well. And it's Kingston's been a blessing for me. Yeah, it's been great. And yeah, I moved back to Toronto in, I think it was 2004. Yeah, end of 2004, beginning of 2005, when I got hired with Toronto Police. And okay. I spent about a decade there before finally.
So there was sort of from you, I guess, I guess it would be, because a lot of friends of mine went also into law enforcement. Was it from sort of high school, university or whatever? And then police college, yeah.
Yeah, so I went to Queens. Okay. I went to Queens for football. Like you, I was big into sports, and then I said, you know, like I was majoring in sociology. I had a minor in psych, and I'm thinking, like, what am I doing? And,
same. You know what? This is weird. Sociology and kinesiology on this. Absolutely no reason, no connection with those two whatsoever. Some guidance counselor, I think, had a few drinks and told me, you know, this isn't a good idea for you. And, you know, boy, were they wrong. But, you know, life experiences for both of us, I guess.
Yeah, you remember that, eh? And I don't know if they still do this or not, but the guidance counselor would bring you in and help you try and pick a job. And every job,
three things you're good at. That's what they told us. Some report they printed out. You're good at this, this, and this. Go do that. Yeah.
It was it was funny. I remember that. I remember being brought into the office, and you know, I didn't have great marks in school. Like I'm a pretty smart guy, I like to think, but I found school just the monotony of it killed me. And so I think, like a lot of young men, I just didn't really apply myself. And I remember sitting in the guidance counselor's office, and, you know, he was saying, you know, maybe you can become a laborer. You know, maybe we can, you know, we can get you into construction, or, you know, maybe you can do some type of landscaping. It was, I remember I was just, and it was all based on my, not diploma, what do you call it? Your grades. There was your transcript.
Oh yeah.
Your transcript. And yeah. I remember thinking, man, like these, I have no interest in that. Like, and I said, well, I kind of like the sciences. I wanted to get into marine biology. He's like, well, I don't know if that's going to be for you, Jordan. You know, I think, you know, we should get you to something a bit simpler. And I you know, it was funny. And now I mean,
love that. Yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah. And it's, you know, you fast forward to now, and, you know, not to, you know, pat myself on the back, but I do very well. You know, I've been very successful, and you know, it's just, it's funny how school can miss it sometimes. You know, it's but you know, it was that to me was an eye opener too. You know, it was like,
holy shit. Sounds like you like being told you can't do something, or you just basically are said, listen, that's not for you. You're not going to do this. I've had family members, and this is why I like these podcasts, because I can kind of treat you as the psychologist couch, whether or not you've got a degree in that. I can still tell you this stuff, but I've had family members tell me, you're never going to make money in real estate. And that's probably why I did. And it, of course I wanted to anyways, but it's also like, okay, I'm proven, you know, and in your case, you're proven that person wrong. You just have to sort of have a reason, and whatever lights the fire. I tell my kids again, don't listen to anybody else about, you know, where you're going to go, especially now I've got a daughter and just starting college, and a son sort of going through the high school life, figuring it all out. And I don't know how much of that guidance counselor, influence is still part of it. But obviously, yeah, you being told that you should, you know, stick to landscaping and construction, yeah, that's great to do on the weekends at home, but it's probably not necessarily what you'll do. No offense to that, because for me, that's my entire family is construction, all that stuff, and that's the hardest work to me in the world. Waking up every morning, doing that every day. But again, obviously there's more to it. So yeah, we talked about this in the sort of the pre-interview about how many guys in the police force. Literally like 90% of the gym that I worked at was, you know, police guys. And I literally met everybody up and down the line, like some of the really high ups. Few of them became clients. So for you, you went from that. And at what point, if you don't mind that or saying it, what sort of caused the tip? What sort of said, okay, you know, this isn't really for me. Let's maybe jump into something else. How did that happen?
You know, so if we're talking about fast forwarding into my career, you know, one of the things I both of my boys are deaf. They were born with a really rare condition. It's called Pendred syndrome. Okay. And, you know, my wife had a gene. It was a recessive gene. There was a mutation.
Wow.
On that gene. I didn't have anything. So, you know, we didn't really know what had caused the hearing loss. We had narrowed it down to this potential Pendred syndrome. And we did, I'm jumping around the story a bit, but we did a generic DNA test called 23andMe.com. Mm-hmm. And it identified my wife's mutation. And I remember we brought it to the geneticist at KGH, Kingston General Hospital. And he kind of laughed me off. He said, oh, this is just hocus pocus, man. I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe the boys had gotten sick, or they were both premature. It was just a little coincidental. Two boys both have, you know, significant hearing loss.
Yeah.
And so long story short, he ended up doing a DNA test and he said, oh shit, no, you were 100% right. This retail $200 kit did what we do, which costs thousands.
Wow.
And I remember just my boys were really young. We were doing a lot of traveling. So we were living in Toronto. We would then go to, we were going to Chio in Ottawa, just all over the place to deal with the kids and their hearing. They have cochlear implants and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, I need to spend some time with my kids. You know, there's going to be a few challenges here. And I was kind of having a bit of, I wouldn't say a midlife crisis, because I was, you know, in my 30s at the time, but, you know, I was looking around at a couple of the guys I was working with, and I mean, again, lovely people, but a lot became very jaded. You know, it's a really tough job, you know, and it's, you're always seeing the worst society has to offer typically, right? And you're like, people call the police when something's gone really, really wrong. People
absolutely are, yeah you're not coming over for anybody's birthday party. Yeah, like, and if it is, it's usually a bad outcome.
Like a domestic. You know, I would see, you know, a lot of my colleagues on their second, third marriages, you know, living in basement apartments. And I said, you know, I just, there's more to life. There's more I want to do. I want to spend time with my family, and I want to travel. I want to do things, and I love creating. I'm you know, you kind of made a point, like, I love it when someone tells me I can't do something. It just fuels me to kind of prove them wrong. And so I've, you know, I remember when I finally said to my platoon, I'm like, guys, I'm done. I've given my 2 weeks. I quit. Just literally walked away. And they said, like, dude, you're making the biggest fucking mistake of your life. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, you know, you're not going to make it. And, and I remember after leaving, I had a few really close friends, and they said, wow, like, I can't believe how many people are kind of making fun of you for what you did. And you left and you walked away. And I just kind of, you know, I took I took it all in, and it helped me. It fueled me. You know, I love, like I said, I love proving people wrong. And I built a really, really successful real estate team. You know, I started Century 21. We talked about that on the phone. Yeah.
Yep.
Ended up moving over to boutique brokerage and finally into Remax, just because Remax has a really great commercial division, which is a lot of what I do now is larger multifamily investment property. And Remax was just a good fit at the time. You know, I built a very successful team. I'm number three globally right now in the entire world, Remax commercial for small commercial teams. And, you know, I just, you know, I've trained agents, and it's just, I took that, and the, you know, that was really, really the big shift for me, was just one day I just said, you know, I can't keep doing this. I'm meant for more. You know, I love teaching and creating and building, and you know, I like to be my own boss. Like, I'm a pretty opinionated person at times. You know, when I feel very passionately about something, you know, I'm not really going to be persuaded by anybody else to do something. So there's always, you know, a bit of a, you know, a shift between me and my supervisor, or not a shift, but a bit of a, sometimes we butt heads with my supervisors when they would want me to do something I just didn't think it was right, or, you know, I just, yeah. So that's what happened.
Okay. No, you know what? And again, that sounds very familiar to me because of the fact that when I was working in the gym and I had so many really good friends who were, again, on the force and, again, detectives, again, many of which became clients, I got to hear a lot of those stories that they couldn't tell other people. Whether or not you ever talked to a personal trainer or the guys at the gym, we were these like very unusual psychologists. Like we got the whole story, like everything for people who were dealing with the substances, like anybody who was smoking or drinking too much and they needed to sweat it out and, you know, find a new addiction is what I called it. And hopefully if I made the gym interesting enough for them, they would start that new addiction and put all that energy, because it never goes away. People who've got any sort of a tendency towards, whether you know you're addicted to, you know, smoking or success, you can not fully redirect it, but I found that even early in my career, I found that you could. So I got to meet a lot of these guys. I saw them go from again police to one of my really good friends I mentioned to you went from police work right into financial world. And he mentioned a lot of the stuff that you did, like, you know, this isn't a really good thing for you. And this guy was huge. This guy was like 6'5", 300, ripped, like the whole thing. He looked like if he walked in the room, everything stopped. And that's probably a good thing to be when you're a police officer, 6'5", 300 and just jacked. But in his case, in his head, that wasn't his calling. He had something else he wanted to do. So obviously, good for you on that. And of course, again, I definitely have sympathy for you, but not sympathy in the bad way, but I understand what you're going through with your kids. On my side of things, my wife is legally blind. So when our kids were born, it was there was a possibility that one of them could be. Thankfully, the eyes are not perfect, but they're not, it's not blindness. And it's just something that, again, it's hereditary. So it's something that goes through. And it's definitely, for me, even before having kids, I knew that's something about the career that I wanted to choose. I wanted to be one of those involved dads. Just because it wasn't a thing. Maybe when you were growing up, maybe, you know, for certain eras, 70s, 80s, 90s, I don't know if there was a lot of dad, dad life hashtags. Yeah. And I had this really great talk this morning with a mortgage guy that's going to join me on the show. And we spent most of the time talking about our kids. So to me, like that's just human, and it's okay now, to be like that. And I'm the worst. I'm one of the worst offenders. I'm one of those dads that'll take my kids to Disney for no reason, just because it's something that I wanted them to have that memory of. I didn't. We did some, you know, some road trips, but nothing like that. I kind of wanted to overdo it. So the fact that you've been through all this stuff, obviously, from the police and to starting your own business and doing so well with Remax. Let's talk a little bit about the software, because I think that's what sort of, it always has to be this way. That's really what drew me to reaching out and discussing with you what it is that you do. So let's talk about your jumping in from police to real estate and then into the software thing. So let's jump into that. And
yeah, that's that's a great question. And what I found, and this, you know, it's just to take a step back a bit. We often talk about, what makes people an expert and how do you become good at what you do? And, you know, we talk about sales. I mean, geez, you even look at the paradigm of sales and how sales was in the 80s to how it is now. I mean, it's everything's changed. And, you know, what I find now is you're not an expert based on the information you have anymore. What makes you an expert today is your ability to curate the information, because frankly, you can learn anything for free now on the internet. I mean, there is just so much information. It's almost like information overload.
Oh yeah.
And you can do a quick Google search about how to invest in real estate and you're hit with so much information that you don't know where to go. And so truly, I believe now what you know, 40 years ago, what made you an expert, you know, if you were a doctor, was having, you know, access to those textbooks and those records that you could then interpret and provide that to your client or your patient, rather. Real estate is no different. And what makes us an expert now is being able to curate all the white noise, you know, in the universe, take it, break it down into something that's digestible and relay it to our clients to make sure that they have a clear understanding of whatever it is we're discussing. And so, you know, for me, real estate investment was no different. You know, you can do a quick Google search right now and you're hit with 100,000 different links or sites, you know, sending you in different directions, you know, people trying to sell you courses. A lot of it is garbage, to be brutally honest. A lot of people with no experience who just have a really good sales ability. And, you know, from a real estate investment perspective, you know, you go back a couple of years ago and all you had access to were just spreadsheets. Most people would create their own Excel spreadsheet and they would try to undertake an evaluation, but real estate is more complicated than that. It really truly is. I mean, it can be very easy, but it becomes easy when you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, one of my biggest challenges as a realtor in sales was helping my clients to make a decision on what property they should buy. I mean, it's simple, right? Like, do you want property A, property B, or property C? You know, and, you know, properties oftentimes, they're all a little bit different. Some have their pros and cons. And, you know, I would try and break it down on a piece of paper for them. And I would, you know, I would work through evaluations and different scenarios. And it was complicated because you would end up staring at a bunch of numbers. And, you know, unless you have a background in finance, most people, they then shifted into what we would call analysis paralysis, right? Where they would look at it and they would look at three or four or five different potential properties and they would look at all the work that I've done and they weren't able to make a decision. And oftentimes the decision they were trying to make was typically predicated on what is the potential future value of that property and is this a good investment or not? And so, you know, I would sit there and try and walk my clients through. At the end of the day, you know, the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? And so I started to build my own systems and my own software to try and break through that white noise and to make things easy for people to understand or digest. And so it started off with my own internal Excel spreadsheets. But again, when you create an Excel spreadsheet, it's all numbers. You know, sometimes you can put some graphs and stuff in there, but it was still hard to understand. And so we went to a tech company in Toronto and we had them build out a few prototypes. And we started off with our MVP, our minimum viable product. We took that, we went to our test subjects, we worked through it. I mean, this has been going on for 3 years, right?
Yeah.
And so we finally came to a version that, you know, was, in our opinion, consumer friendly, and we could push out to the masses. And basically it lets people look at property very objectively. And, you know, one of the biggest problems I find in real estate investment is everybody does an evaluation a little bit differently. And that's a problem because really there's one way to do an evaluation. There's not five different ways. I mean, there are different metrics you can look at. At the end of the day, there are certain key inputs we require to determine property value. And so what we've done is, you know, and like I told you before, I've worked with a lot of institutional clients, and I've helped design their acquisitions software. So I was very familiar with that. And so I know what the banks look for. I know how the banks undertake their evaluations. Why not build a software that uses the best of both worlds? You know, a bank typically looks at current value, but a lot of these institutional clients with their fund syndications or REITs, while they take into account the property's you know, overall health on purchase, they also look for future value as well. And so we combine that process to create a system where you can.
So important. You brought that up twice already about the future value being what people are really buying. And that's something that not many people grasp. So I'm glad you've already hit on that twice. It's so important.
You know, but even that future value, you know, your purchase is very important. Right. I mean, honestly, I will tell you this, you make money on the buy.
That's it. That's also very old school thinking that is so important to remind people. Yes, you're only making money when you buy.
Yeah. And so
however you say it. Yeah.
The buy has to be right. And you know, you know, you have to have really strong fundamentals when you go into this. And you know, what happens is I find, you know, especially real estate investors, they want to get started in the market. They don't know really how to get started. Then they get linked up with a realtor. Hopefully they're a good realtor, not all the time. It happens, right? And then they kind of get stuck where they think they need to go and make a purchase really quickly because they want to start their journey. But you know what people need to understand is one bad purchase can ruin you forever. I mean, this is arguably one of the biggest investments you're ever going to make in your entire life. And so it needs to be a good investment.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, you know, for me, I've broken the system down so we can remove that confirmation bias. Because what I found is people will look at a property and they cannot remove the emotion. And really emotion can ruin you in this business. And so they want the property to work so bad that they start bringing in their own confirmation biases and they start tweaking the numbers. They start reducing the maintenance and the expenses to try and make that number fit. And it's really, really dangerous. And then they get involved into one of these purchases and they realize very quickly that, holy crap, I've made a really bad decision here.
Yep.
You know, and I, you know, now for me to get my money back out, I'm going to have to put in more money, improve the property. You know, I could be stuck with entrenched tenants. And, you know, look at what Paul, I mean, I'm sure you're aware if you're part of all these real estate forums right now, all the people who had over leveraged themselves, you know, promissory notes and being over leveraged. And there's bankruptcies happening left, right, and center in this business. And it's people yep. Who did not have good fundamentals and how they undertook their evaluations. Because if you follow the steps from A to Z and you do a thorough analysis of a property, I mean, the proof is there in the summary pages that we generate for our clients. And so, you know, that's kind of what it was a long-winded answer, but that's what led us to create the software, because I was just tired of people making bad decisions, and not just the buyer. I mean, Paul, you know, as well as I do, when you have a client come to you and they want to make a purchase, oftentimes they're relying on the realtor to help them work through these processes.
Yep.
Right? 'Cause at the end of the day, they look to us as the expert. Right. And so like the software itself is meant for realtors. It's meant for realtors and buyers alike. It's meant for us to help our clients make these necessary decisions.
I think, again, you've touched on a lot of subjects there. And the fact that, again, to make any program, and I've also had sort of my run-ins, I'll call them, with app developers over the years trying to create the vision that I had in my head. Which is a combination of, rugby contact, football, years of football. And then there's some part in there somewhere that comes up with these, in my opinion, brilliant ideas, but no one else is ever going to hear about them. So how do I put them out into the world and talk to people? Of course, that's, as that's one subject, but there's the other part of it, which falls into social media in terms of, I call it the goldfish, the goldfish concern is that, and it ranges everywhere from 3 to 8 seconds before people sometimes will either continue scrolling or drop off the earth and never, you know, go back again. That includes this podcast, which is why I sort of have a, sort of a target for trying to keep it. What's the term for it is the long form podcast. And there's lots of them out there. And I sometimes listen to them, but there's no way. I think with our kind of topic, no offense to us, but with real estate and with business talk, I think it is kind of good to sort of have these sort of segments of things that we talk about. So the fact that you've got software that helps to simplify, and I think that's probably, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing it's part of your testing is how do you make sure people stay in the software before they get so, as you mentioned, analysis, so paralyzed with the numbers? Because again, maybe you, I don't know about you, but for my first purchase, I still have like, I think it was 5 or 6 pages of my own terrible handwriting of all the scenarios about here's the price, here's the mortgage rate, here's this, here's the taxes, all this stuff, writing it all down. And it looks like the guy from The Beautiful Mind wrote it. If I look at it now, it makes no sense to me at all. I don't know what I was thinking. At the time, though, I'm sure it was crystal clear. Because again, it was all the money in the world. This for me, this was 98, and it was $140,000 purchase. And that kind of money, I never even considered. Like, it's, you know, you're buying a house, you don't think of that much money. But for me, that was millions of dollars yeah. in my mind, and just the pressure on my shoulders, like, okay, I better get this right. And as everybody who starts off, I wanted this to be an investment property. So I started off on the right foot, got some bad tenants, learned really early, trial by fire, that, I can't just do this passively. And I was kind of just learning my way through, but this was before, software came along, and doing background checks got a lot easier over the last 20 something years. So the fact that you came up with something, the programs that you have, I think that's definitely going to be something that people, and you probably know, have benefited from. So what's you mentioned one of the programs, and how many pieces of software have you put together so far?
Yeah. So this is the main piece of software that we built. There's a few other things we're working on that are in development right now, but it's, we made the point about future values. And so that's the other kind of component of this. Whether you're a realtor or a buyer, mm-hmm. You and I both agree you make money on the buy, right? Mm-hmm. So the evaluation of the purchase needs to make sense. We really want to be in a cash flow positive position. But what we do, because there are different components of the software, which I want to explain to you. And so the purchase software is one thing. So we input all of our purchase details into the property. A true accounting of the income and expenses. And then when we move, then after we get to that stage, we're provided with a summary of the purchase. So at the end of the day, we don't want to waste too much time if the property doesn't make any sense, right? So you get a bit of a summary of all the financial details you need to know, very, very clearly laid out in nice graphs and dials and numbers. So it makes a lot of sense, very digestible. Where investors need to be really smart is on that future value. How do we realize the future value? How do we get from point A to point B? And that's oftentimes where a lot of people get stuck, right? And so the software is very, very good at, let's say we're talking about a 12 unit apartment building, and we look at that building and we say, okay, I'm going to make this purchase. Here's a breakdown of the tenant profile. This is how long the tenants have been there. What we try and determine is, what the real probability is of increasing the rent, right? Because we really make money in real estate one way, and that's by increasing our net income. And we can do that a number of different ways, by increasing the rent or decreasing the expenses, right? And so what the software does is it looks at the property as a whole, and it lets you know what it thinks the realistic probability is on how many units you can improve. So if it's a 12 unit building, we might say, we're going to identify a 36 month stabilization period, and we think we're going to flip 4 units out of the 12. Okay, so a third. So the system will look at the entire potential future value, but it's going to hone you in on a realistic target value. And that is the important piece to this that no other software in the world does. When you get into the large funds and syndications, they do use software like this, but it's very complicated Excel spreadsheets, which truthfully I've looked at them, and they're really hard to understand. And so the software, like I told you, removes that confirmation bias, and it directs you to where it thinks the value of the property is going to be. Because when we as the buyer say, shit, I need, to make this work, I need 5 units. If I can flip 5 units, I'm cash flow positive. Mm-hmm. One, that's a huge mistake. But, the system says, listen, we're probably going to flip 4 units. It helps bring you down to reality. And then what it can do is it's going to provide you a new potential future value. And then the software directs you into the refinancing component if you wish. Again, it's kind of like a build your own story. You can just do the summary. You can do the summary plus the improvement, or you can do the summary improvement and the refinance. And so you can see your plan, a 36 month plan of where you're going to be from start to finish at the end of that 3 years. And so that's what is really important, Paul, is you have to look at things objectively. You got to remove that emotion. And so the software, it's very complicated. The back end of it is complicated.
Yeah.
The front facing that we see as users, mm-hmm. made it very, very simple. And again, it does a lot more than what I'm describing. I could sit here for 2 hours and tell you all the phenomenal features it has, like the portfolio management tools we have to track your net worth and equity opportunities. There's a really incredible collaboration feature, so you can share links to clients, or clients can share links to you, or partners can share links to each other and then collaborate real time on properties together, which again is very unique. You know, it's great for mortgage brokers. You know, I could, if you were my broker, Paul, I could send you all of my work, and within 30 seconds, you could import all of my data into your system so you could underwrite the property for me, which is a huge time saver, right? Like, I mean, you probably know as well as I do, Paul, how many of us will go to the broker and say, hey, I want to buy this property, you know, and I've done my evaluation. Can you go do yours? Well, I mean, that takes time, right? And so at the end of the day, efficiency for me is very important. That's kind of what leads me in my life. How do I make things easier and better? How do I improve things? How do I improve the user experience? How do I make things easier for my clients, my buyers, my sellers, whatever it might be? So
awesome. Jordan, you know what? This has been such a great discussion. And of course, a great podcast to me is always one that's to be continued. And sounds to me like this.
We could just talk about, anything, how to undertake proper evaluations, the breakdown of classification of real estate assets. I mean, all these things. I mean, there's so much to learn. I mean, there's 25 years of knowledge in my head, right? So it's
I do want people to be able to reach out to you. And this is going to be, I hope, when I get all this stuff out there as far as for our present for the posts that we're going to be doing together. I want to make sure that those topics are clear so that, of course, they can reach out to you and have, a deep dive into those topics. Because I think the one thing about this, of course, this is a public, forum that we're doing. We're going to be out there and there's going to be people listening. But the conversations that we have, the sort of the really important life-changing conversations, are always going to be one-on-one, or, you and the group of the people that are, making the big decision. Because a lot of these people, again, some of them are extremely private. One of the sort of the fun stories I'm going to be sharing this week, doing a podcast about, is how I had a blue jay, pretty high ranking baseball player, go through one of my listings last year or two. And one of the funny things that he did, just because of the fact that he was so concerned about privacy, he said, can I see the house? Can I just have a look at the house before I actually bring my wife? And I didn't understand what he meant by it, but what he did was he was looking to make sure that the person that was in the house wasn't a Blue Jays rabid fan that would tell every other neighbor on the street, by the way, so-and-so just showed up, or so-and-so is moving into the area. So privacy is, I guess that's sort of a really long-winded story about how important privacy is. But I think once these conversations start with us out here, and they know you're the guy to talk to about this stuff, and I'm really looking forward to us doing hopefully some back and forth collaborations between Kingston and Toronto. And you've got, obviously, you've probably got reasons to come back here to drop off deposit checks or referral checks. And I love doing the same. I'm really strange about this. I've dropped off referral checks to clients, to fellow agents in Niagara Falls, just because I just decided, okay, kids, we're getting in the car. I'm driving this check up to Niagara Falls, and not yesterday. That would have been ridiculous. But almost any other weekend or week, I'll say, you know what? It's Friday. I got this check I got to give this guy. And I've done this before for, again, other places. And again, I'm looking forward to hopefully, working on something like that with you as we move forward. And again, thanks so much for joining me today. And what's the best way for people to reach you if they do want to have, again, the longer version of this longer sort of like deep dive type conversation with you, Jordan?
I'll share my link for you for my, so what we've done is we've built in a one-on-one booking in the website so people can book a one-on-one totally free.
It's nice.
It's a 30-minute session. I'll share those with you so you can post those. I'll share a link to the website. We are undergoing a new branding. So we're called Burbot. So buy, renovate, re-rent, refinance, repeat. But truthfully, the software is so much bigger than that. So we are called PropertyCast. That is the new name. Nice. So Property Forecaster. All that branding should be pushed through mid next week. Just taking care of a few small details. But I'll share all those links with you.
Awesome.
So people can book in and we can explain to them the software and how it works.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks again so much for joining me, Jordan. I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate you going into, again, life, work, our experience with guidance counselors, which, again, I can guarantee you that might be the thing that gets the most comments, because, again, I know we're not the only ones who went through this. So, these real life discussions, I think, again, the ones that I get to have with you guys at conferences, and we end up talking for an hour about, sports and music and movies and The Godfather, whatever the topic comes up that we're both into, and we end up talking for an hour. For me, that's the kitchen table type discussions. I think that podcasts are also, supposed to be good for. So once again, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining me today, Jordan.
Thank you, my friend. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Take care.